Hello and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd and you can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at @redrock_bball, on Facebook at facebook.com/redrockbasketball, and on email redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com. Well, here with the second episode of the Season Review Podcast, and I'm going to be tackling the one that was probably that I wasn't looking forward to the most, maybe that's fair to say, the New York Knicks, because really just go and cast your eye across the New York Knicks roster, and it's brutal, it's ugly, it's just devoid of talent, but it's not completely bleak, it's pretty bleak. But it's not completely bereft of talent. And there were guys that were usable for stretches throughout the season. We're going to detail all that today. Now, I'm doing this podcast after the draft lottery. The Knicks feel like they've been skewered by a lightning bolt. Everyone's against them. They've dropped down to pick four and it's so unfair. It's not that unfair. Let's be honest. I think the top four players, are a class above the rest of the players. So they fall into that top four. And now they're in true Knicks style going out there. We're going to trade the pick. To me, that's ludicrous. I don't know. It sounds ludicrous. What are they going to get back? What sort of player are they going to get back in exchange for pick four? Do they trade it for another first round pick in another season? I think it's stupid. We'll see what sort of offers come out and what sort of whispers there are and if they actually do the deal. But I think they should be targeting someone like an Emmanuel Mudiay or D'Angelo Russell. You're running that backcourt and I think they could be successful in that situation. What are they aiming for? To try and trade it with someone for an unprotected lottery pick and get pick three or pick two next year? It's too much gambling there. And what sort of player is going to be available in trade talks? I'm obviously not the GM. I'm not Phil Jackson, but if anyone listening thinks that the Knicks trading away pick four is a great idea or any ideas of who they're going to get back for it, let me know what you think. But I look around the league and I think who's going to be making a deal like that and who's going to be trading a real value piece. People don't want to trade. I don't think they want to trade guys who are known commodities for an unknown commodity at pick four. You might get a great player at pick four. You might also get Cody Zeller at pick four, someone that turns out to that. It's very up in the air. So you look around at other teams, who are they going to give up? I don't see many guys out there. One interesting one that sort of came to mind is Ty Lawson, but I don't necessarily think that's a great move. Lawson could easily be better than a pick four player. I think that pick four could also be better than Ty Lawson. But would the Nuggets do that? I don't think they would. It's an interesting scenario, and that's something I've just pulled completely out of my own head. I haven't heard any rumors or whispers about Ty Lawson going to the Knicks, but it's something that does. It makes partial sense. We've heard Lawson having issues with Denver and maybe wanting to move on from there. But still, I don't think the Knicks should be making that trade. I don't think they should be trading away pick four unless it's for a player, probably a better quality player than Ty Lawson. That's enough of speculation about the draft. I'm going to cover more stuff about the draft later on in this offseason towards, obviously, before the draft. We're here to look at the season in review, the season that was for the New York Knicks, and look at the fantasy value of the players that called the Big Apple home last season. Let's start in the backcourt. I think that's always a pretty good place to start when looking at these reviews, and that's the way I started the Timberwolves one. And thanks for all the feedback I got from you guys about the Timberwolves podcast. It was very positive. Anyone's got any suggestions about things, please let me know. But it was great to hear you guys that you enjoyed it and you got some great information out of it, which is very pleasing for me to hear that. Now let's look at these point guards and see what we can do. I think they're going to have to pick a point guard in the draft, but they do have some who are still on the roster. Langston Galloway, who was a guy signed during the season out of the D League, he's got one more year on his contract. He signed for the rest of 2014-15, and he signed through 2015-16. He'll become a restricted free agent after that. And he was somewhat of a revelation. His overall numbers don't look great, 229 for head-to-head, 209 for roto, but it's because he didn't play a starring role or a big role for basically the whole season. He only played 45 games, so not a whole season from Langston Galloway. On a per-game basis, really impressive, 109th. Post-All-Star break, 108th. The last month, 87th. So really ramping his numbers up towards the end of the season. And I don't think he's a starting caliber player on a good team, but he showed that he does have an ability to play in the NBA. Depending on what the Knicks do in free agents, and they've got a lot of guys who are free agents, Galloway's fantasy value, he might be a guy that you take in the last round of drafts. I don't think that he's going to be anywhere close to a top 100 player as he was over the last month, because there'll be the influx of talent back into New York with Carmelo Anthony coming back with maybe that top 4 pick or whatever they acquire for the top 4 pick, and maybe some free agents coming in as well. So I don't know if Galloway can necessarily replicate the numbers he had this season on that per game basis, or that last month where he was ranked 87th, but he showed that he can do some things in the league. His season wasn't a complete write-off. 1.5 threes, a steal a game, 4 rebounds, 3.5 assists, 12 points. Not great shooting, but a pretty good season, I think, from Langston Galloway, all things considered. Jose Calderon, the point guard they got in the Tyson Chandler deal, which is just looks dumber and dumber every season, and not referencing the movie. When you look at that trade, how they got rid of Tyson Chandler and they've still got Calderon for another 2 years at $15 million combined, over $7 million both seasons. It's a lot of money. Now, they were probably trying to trade, we heard rumors of them trying to trade him at the trade deadline. Nothing would come through because he just looked broken down this season. He didn't look the same guy. And at 2 years at $15 million left, just think, I mentioned on the Timberwolves podcast, Kevin Martin is the same price. Are you going to pay that money for Jose Calderon, or are you going to try and get Kevin Martin for that price? It's a complete no-brainer. Now, $7 million is not break the bank money, but it's still, it's too high for what Calderon was able to produce last season. Per game value, 154. So he was sort of right outside the 12-team league area, the range. He sort of, the injuries he had at the start of the season, at the end of the season, obviously hampered what he was able to do, but there was always the hope, this team needs someone, he's going to shoot threes, he's going to do something, but he never did. Basically, it never came through. His total rankings of 234 and 245 for Roto, not great. Post All-Star, he was even worse. He dropped down to 251st. Just not a good season from Jose Calderon, one of his worst seasons in recent memory. Only averaged 9 points, 1.5 threes, 4.7 assists. Even his field goal percentage, which is something that's always been really impressive for him, at 42%. Couldn't hit shots. Now, he hit 42% of his threes, and he's been a great three-point shooter throughout his career, and that's a great number. But the other numbers definitely dropped off. He still played 30 minutes a game, and that's the thing. Like, he wasn't limited to low minutes, and he only played 42 games, but 30 minutes, and he just couldn't get anything done. Now, the injuries in the preseason, I think preseason injuries and early season injuries have such an impact on players, and we saw numerous examples of that sort of stuff, but they impact players after they're back from that injury for a long time, and that could be a case of what happened to Calderon. So he could bounce back, but he is 33, so the chances of him bouncing back and having a massive season are probably low. He's likely still going to be on the Knicks, and he will probably be sort of a placeholder starter if they do draft a point guard, but I'd imagine by the first couple of months he'd be on the bench 20 to 25 minutes, maybe playing a little bit off the ball as well, as a spot-up shooter, while someone like Moutier or D'Angelo Russell plays and gets their feet wet on a team that's trying to get themselves back into some sort of relevance. Not that the Knicks have been relevant for ages anyway, but they need to get themselves back. Fantasy value for Jose Calderon, it ended up being garbage last season. It's not going to be great next season. I don't think there's going to be any need to look at him in any sort of draft, although we could be looking at that a month into the season going, yeah, he's going to be a nice short-term ad. Anything apart from that feels, it doesn't feel like it's realistic. Now let's look at some of the other guards on his team. Alexei Shved was a revelation towards the end of the season. He's an upcoming restricted free agent. Obviously, it'll be interesting to see what the Knicks do, whether they're offering him a qualifying offer or if they're going to match any sort of contract. He's never been able to really do anything in his other stops in Philadelphia, in Minnesota, in Houston for a brief period of time. But he was great at the end of the season. Per game, 219th. But that's not the story of Alexei Shved. The story is after the All-Star break, 97th. In the last month of the season, 57th. On a per 36 basis, for the course of the season, 27th. He was great at times, and we saw he was able to just, he was almost a triple-double every night. His numbers, though, aren't impressive when you look at the season. 10 points, 1 3, 2.5 rebounds, 2.5 assists, 0.7 steals. Nothing too exciting there, but when he got the big minutes, he was able to put up big numbers. Now, the thing is, will he get the big minutes again? You'd have to think probably not if he even comes back to New York, but just it's always something to keep in the back of your mind that when Alexei Shved is given the opportunity, he can put up decent numbers. Now, whether he gets that opportunity or not is a completely different story. For fantasy drafts next season, it's going to depend a lot on what the Knicks do, say, in the draft and throughout free agency and what they do with Shved and to where he goes. But he's someone to keep in the back of your mind, but I don't imagine he's going to be someone where we're going to be looking at him taking inside the top 100 or anything like that. In terms of Dynasty League value for Alexei Shved, it's limited. He's obviously got a spot inside the top 300 or probably even a top 200, top 250, but does he ever get the chance that he had in New York this season to thrive like that? I think that's doubtful. He's 26 years old now already. Not young. We're not talking about a 20-year-old, a 22-year-old. He's already 26. Does he get any better? Does he ever get a role that he had towards the end here in New York? I think that's a little bit doubtful that he gets that. The other point guard the Knicks had on their roster, Shane Larkin, who came across with Jose Calderon in that Tyson Chandler deal. Now, Larkin is in his second season, but he's a free agent because the team option on his rookie contract was declined. So is he going to be back in New York? Now, he had moments of partial excitement, maybe. I think that's the best way of putting it. He started a lot of the games for the Knicks this season. He played 76 games. He played 25 minutes a game, but nothing exciting. 6 points, half a three, three assists, 1.2 steals, which is only his really redeeming feature. Doesn't shoot the ball that well. 78 from the free throw line, 43 from the field. Nothing all that exciting about Shane Larkin. Now, he can be a bit of a defensive terror. His total value was okay for the season. 148th, 163rd for Roto, 175 per game. Yeah, his numbers are consistent. Post All-Star 162, the last month of the season 126. So never really wowing one. He'd have those games where he'd go three or four steals and you know, have eight or nine assists and you go, oh, look at Shane Larkin, and then he'd really struggle. Don't think there's much of a big time future for Shane Larkin. He's only 22. He's only been in the league two seasons now, but he's never really shown anything apart from some defensive ability and the ability to get steals in bunches occasionally, but it just hasn't been enough. And again, I think the Knicks are going to be looking to bring in another point guard. I don't know if there's going to be another opportunity for Larkin to succeed, because again, he had a great opportunity this season to put up big minutes and to impress the Knicks. I don't think he did that. Whether he comes back or not is up in the air. We said they've already got Calderon and Galloway on the books. Shved, the restricted free agent. Larkin, an unrestricted free agent due to that option being declined. Where do they go with both of those guys? Dynasty League value, don't think there's really much, to be honest, with Larkin. I don't necessarily think he's going to break out. Deeper leagues will obviously want to consider him and see where he appears, because he could be a decent backup that plays 20 minutes. I think that Houston would like to have him now as a point guard. Look, not that the Prigioni and Terry are doing terribly, but I think Larkin would be okay for them and allow them to put the pressure on like Beverly did, that sort of defensive pressure that he's able to do. So there is going to be a role for him, but he just wasn't able to get it done fantasy stats-wise, even when given a big opportunity this season. I think that sort of puts the death knell for Shane Larkin in terms of his long-term fantasy value. Let's look at the rest of the backcourt for the Knicks. Tim Hardaway Jr. is there, and if you listen to my podcast throughout the season, you know that I am not the biggest Tim Hardaway Jr. fan at all, and that's probably somewhat of an understatement. He played 24 minutes a game in the 70 games that he played, 11.5 points, 1.7 threes, and then just a lot of nothingness, 2 rebounds, less than 2 assists, 0.3 steals, 0.2 blocks, 39% shooting. He's just not a great fantasy option. He's not a great NBA player. 202 as a head-to-head player, 222 as Roto. Nothing exciting. Even in the last month where we had all these guys injured, you know, Calderon out and Mallow out, Hardaway, 192. He's never going to be a great fantasy player because he's a scorer. That's all he is. Now, he will have nights where he'll go out there and hit 5 threes and give you 17, 18 points, and people will go, yeah, it's Tim Hardaway. I've got to grab Tim Hardaway. But he's a nothing player. There's no rebounds. There's no assists. There's no steals. There's no blocks. There's bad percentages. Yeah, there'll be some threes, But it's never enough to go, yeah, this is super exciting from Tim Hardaway Jr. And I don't think he's got much of a career in the NBA in terms of being ever being a starter or anything like that. If I own him in a dynasty league and someone is infatuated by the Knicks or the name or the scoring ability, I'm trying to unload him and try and get whatever deal I can from him, because I just don't think there is much from him in terms of fantasy value. You see, per game, 234th. Yeah, maybe he sneaks into the top 200 at some stage, but I wouldn't count on it. He's just not... he's not a consistent enough performer, and he doesn't do enough things right from a fantasy perspective where you go, this guy is going to have sustained value for a long time. The other shooting guard that's on the roster, or was on the roster last season, Ricky Lito, who was cut by the Mavericks and then signed by the Knicks. Now, he is a restricted free agent. He really didn't do a huge amount. Like, he had a couple of good games towards the end of the season, but only played 17 games. Less than 15 a game, 5 points, one assist. He can score. He can't do much else. The numbers aren't that exciting. You'd have to be talking a very, very deep dynasty league for Ricky Lito to be even considered. We don't even know if he's going to have a team. He might go back to the D League. He might play overseas. I don't think that we're going to see Ricky Lito in the NBA next season. And if we do, it'll be a 10-day contract style thing for him. Now, small forward. We all know who the main player is at this position. And when we're talking about the listener questions that came in, they all focused on Carmelo Anthony, who was a disappointment. Maybe not as big a disappointment as many people think, but he was a disappointment nonetheless. So let's get to the questions first. Dean Vasek asks, where would you put Melo in your head-to-head rankings for next year? Now, that's an interesting one, Dean, and I'll get back to that when I talk about where he ranked this season. Ivan Gazik on Instagram, who's iGazik0, will the Knicks sign any big names this offseason, and what to expect of Melo next year? Well, again, I'll cover the Melo thing. The big names, I really don't think that many big names are going to be wanting to flock to New York. I think they'll find themselves in a similar situation to what the Lakers did last offseason when they had, you know, sky-high hopes and dreams of everyone coming to sign for them, and in the end they ended up with Jordan Hill and Carlos Boozer. Not big names at all. I imagine the Knicks will be in a similar position to that. Now, Melo, he's the name that I think most people want to hear about. We know that he's got a lot of money and a lot of years left in New York, so that's not a problem. He's going to get paid over $20 million for the next four seasons. He is the face of this franchise, and look, his season was not good. It started off not great at all. It did definitely, it improved, but he was playing on a knee injury for basically all of the 40 games that he played. I was extremely critical of the way Melo handled himself, of the way the Knicks handled it, of the way he set his rehab back by a month by playing in the All-Star game that meant nothing and then shutting it down straight after with all the bullshit quotes that would come out from him and from the team about, yeah, we'll see how it goes and he's day-to-day, and then miraculously he's done for the season. It was just so predictable. It was so selfish, and again, he's putting his rehab back. Now, Melo's not young. He's 31 years old. He needs time to recover from these injuries, and let's hope we haven't seen the best of Melo so far. We probably have seen the best. Let's hope we haven't seen the end of All-Star caliber Melo. His numbers ended up being pretty good. 24 points, 1.5 threes, 6.5 rebounds, 3 assists, a steal, 44 and 80% as his two percentages. They're not terrible. The problem was, is he was playing on a gimpy knee. If you played in weekly leagues, it was really, really hard to rely upon Melo because you didn't know if he was going to sit out this game or sit out that game. If the Knicks had a 4-game week, Melo might play 2, he might play 3, he might play 4, he might play 0. Who knew what was going to happen? But if you look at his numbers on a per game basis, they're great. He was 35th overall. Now that's, actually, I'll rephrase that. They're good. Because he was picked, and I definitely felt trapped to this. I had him high. I think I had him at 10 or 11 in my preseason rankings. He would have been picked in the second round in every single draft, sometimes in the first, and he didn't live up to it. He didn't mesh with the triangle system very well, with the new coach, with the lack of talent around him. It just didn't work out very well for Melo. His total value, though, considering he only played 40 games, ended up being impressive. In roto leagues especially, ranked 133rd, in head-to-head 181. So you get half a season out of Melo and he still comes in a total value in roto leagues at 133. And he is a better roto player than a head-to-head player because he is quite well-rounded. The over 3 assists, the 6 rebounds, the 3s, the points, steals, the percentages are both okay. Even throws in a half a block a game. Not bad numbers from Melo. Now, what happens to him next season? Now, I think that Melo is going to be a guy that there was a lot of hate piled on him this season. And I piled on a lot of it as well. Not necessarily hate, because I hate using that word. I just use it then. I don't think I was piling hate on. I was just really super critical of the way he handled the injury and the injury situation. But next year, I reckon you're going to get a pretty significant discount on Mallet. I think that you might be able to find him outside the top 30. Now, I don't know where I'm going to have him ranked just yet. I'll probably have him ranked somewhere in the 20s would be my guess, maybe the late teens. I'd say probably mid-20s would be the spot for Mallet, but I reckon you might be able to find him sliding outside the top 30 in a lot of situations because of what happened last year, the injuries, and the way he started the season. It was such a big narrative. Mello stinks. Mello can't do anything in the triangle. Mello sucks. Mello's injured. Where in reality, through December and January when he actually played, his numbers were a lot better, especially through January when he came back after that London trip. He was putting up big numbers on one leg, and they were impressive. They were like top 20 sort of numbers. Now, if he's fully healthy, the Knicks have more talent, whether they miraculously get someone in free agency, or if they get someone who's going to contribute immediately with that fourth pick, there's going to be more players around there. It's a second season for Derek Fisher. Players get more used to what he's trying to do. He gets more used to the job. I think that Mello could be a potential bargain player. I use that loosely. Now, before this season, he was like a top 10 fantasy player for about the last 2 or 3 years before that. Previously, he hadn't really been a top 10 sort of talent. He'd been a 20s to 30s guy. I think you'll find him outside the top 30. But I reckon that he'll give you potentially value in the late teens, early 20s. I think that's probably where we'll fit. You'll have to be a little bit bold and take the risk on him. But I think that a lot of people will be turning away from Mello unless you're in a league where people are just drafting based on names from 2007. And they're going, I've got to get Mello and I'm going to pick him early. I think if you're in a league with guys who are relatively switched on and know what they're thinking about or follow the NBA pretty closely, I think you might find Mello slide a little bit. And bear in mind, 35th per game was his rank this season, and that was with injuries. So I think we can get higher than that. I think he can push into the early 20s. I think that's where Mello sort of sits. He's obviously the best player on this team. It's not even close with anybody else and anyone who comes in free agency. It's Mello's team. He's going to want to bounce back and show that he's not washed up and show that this was a partial aberration this season. I think he could be in for a bounce back season. I'm not taking him in the first round or the early second, but a second round pick is not completely bonkers for Mello at this stage. If you're picking, say, at 23 or 24 or something like that, it's not completely crazy because I reckon he might return value better than that. Other small forwards on this team. Lance Thomas, who came across in that trade there where we had J.R. Smith and Iman Shumpert shipped out. There was the Thunder involved and pieces going all over the place. Lance Thomas arrived. He was waived. He was re-signed. And he did nothing to excite us at all. Per game, 407th. That says it all. He had games where he was okay, and you could use him even in his time early in Oklahoma City or in New York. But overall, his value, it wasn't great. He played 24 minutes a game. Lance Thomas played 24 minutes a game in the NBA in 62 games in 2014-15. That's damning of the Knicks, really. 7 points a game, 3 rebounds, 1 assist, 0.5 steal. Not a good shooter. Lance Thomas has no dynasty value. He is an unrestricted free agent. I don't know if he comes back to the Knicks. Even if he does, no matter where he goes, he's going to be a complete bit player, and there's nothing really redeeming about Lance Thomas. Quincy Acey, another guy who he's another free agent. He's a restricted free agent this offseason. Came across from Sacramento and showed at times that he was okay. I think that's the best that I can say for him. Now, the numbers are definitely not impressive. He started hitting three-pointers, which was good. In 19 minutes a game, he hit 0.3 threes, and it doesn't sound a lot, but in 19 minutes, that's okay for a guy who can get some rebounds. 6 points, 4.5 rebounds. Good percentages, very good percentages. In fact, 46 and 78 for a guy who's a power forward. But his numbers, that they don't really entice you that much. 274 for per game, 237 for head-to-head, 236 for roto, so basically the same sort of player across both formats. Didn't pick it up at the end of the season, really. It's 227. There's not much there for him. Again, a restricted free agent. Do the Knicks tender him at all? Do they match any deals? I think that he's going to get a pretty low offer wherever he ends up going, if he gets any offers at all. Now, he did start a lot of the games as the power forward, which was baffling to me. The way the Knicks ran their rotation all season was baffling, but AC shouldn't have been starting as many games as he was. You know, Cole Aldrich was there. He should have been playing more minutes, trying to develop a bit of a younger player. AC just was getting too many minutes for my liking, and that's Derek Fisher's inexperience, and maybe he's just a poor coach. There's a huge possibility of that as well. Now, Quincy AC in dynasty leagues, I don't think there's really any chance for him to break out. Like most of these players in this team, if they weren't able to do much in the big opportunity they got, I don't know if they're going to be able to do much moving forward. That's like Hardaway. AC's one of those. Lance Thomas had big minutes. Jose Calderon had a good chance. Shane Larkin had a great chance. There are a couple of guys we're going to touch on soon that I think can definitely improve and showed that at times. But guys like Quincy Acey, not necessarily one of them. One of them, though, is Klee Anthony Early, the team's number one draft pick from 2014, a second round choice. I was excited for Klee Anthony Early before the season, before the draft. I thought, where this guy goes, there's going to be some value. Then he went to the Knicks, and then I thought, okay, this is before Melo had signed. If Melo signed somewhere else and the Knicks don't get anyone, we could see Anthony, I always get their names wrong, Klee Anthony, we could see Early starting at some point in the season and putting up decent numbers. Well, we did see him starting at points in the season, but he wasn't all that good. He was intriguing, but not all that good. He only played 39 games. He dealt with some ankle issues, 17 minutes a game, 5 points, 2.5 rebounds, half a steal, an assist, half a three. Not a great shooter. 36% from the field, but that's very common for rookies. You know, if we see him at 42, 43% next season, it's not going to be a shock. To see rises of 7, 8% from guys is not out of the ordinary at all. So Klee Anthony Early is someone to keep an eye on. I think there is some dynasty value for him. Now, his numbers, they're obviously not impressive. 366 in head-to-head rank. That's not good. His per-game value, exactly the same. 366. The last month, he turned it up a bit. We're at 240 per game. That's okay. His per 36 numbers, 273. But he's a rookie. You're going to see some more minutes. Some more production or better production. The problem is that Melo is going to be back. So the minutes that potentially could have been there for him to play, 30 minutes a night as the small forward, it's not going to be there anymore. Derek Fisher didn't trust him to do that last season, which was something that I was against. I don't know why they'd give Lance Thomas the minutes over Klee Anthony Early. I don't know what Fisher was trying to gain from doing that. But the opportunity for Early is not going to be as great this season. But we could see him work his way into a primary wing backup guy and get 20 minutes. And then in a deeper league by the end of this, by the end of next season or the season after, he's worked himself into a top 180 sort of fantasy player. He has the ability. He can score. He can get some steals. He can rebound the ball. He's not going to be a great all-round producer, but once his efficiency goes up, he'll get trusted more and you'll see more numbers come from Klee Anthony Early, I think. The front court. There's some, how should I say this kindly? Every one of these guys is white. There's a distinct lack of athleticism amongst a lot of these guys. We have Lou Amundsen, Travis Ware, Jason Smith, Andrea Bargnani, and Cole Aldrich. Every one of them is a free agent. Aldrich, Amundsen, Smith, and Bargnani are all unrestricted free agents. Travis Ware is a restricted free agent. He was an undrafted rookie. So, what happens? Now, we've heard that Andrea Bargnani is amenable to coming back to the Knicks, obviously on a much, much reduced contract because his contract this season at $11.5 million, he is not going to be getting that. He probably won't get that in totality of his next deal. And that's not to say that he was terrible this year, because he wasn't. His total numbers are not good. 291 for head-to-head and 304 for roto. They're not good, but he didn't play many games. He only played 29 games, but he played 27 minutes in those games, an average 15 points, 4.5 rebounds, a block a game. His free throw percentage was stellar as usual at 81%. Hit half a three, so he was good. And we look at his per-game numbers, his per-game ranking, 133 per game. But then we look at him post All-Star break, 107 last month, 113. He stepped it up, and he was a guy you had to own pretty much down the stretch. Now, he had some quiet games, but he also had some massive games of big double-doubles, 20 and 10 games, multiple block games, and was a real key feature for this team. Now, I can see them bringing him back because it's unlikely the Knicks are going to be in a position to bring in a big center at pick 4 in the draft. Okafor and Towns will likely be gone 1 and 2. So they would love to get their hands on one of those guys. As I said, they've got no big men locked in for next season whatsoever. But Bagnani could come back and play 20 to 24 minutes. That makes him sort of valuable in deeper leagues. We know who Andrea Bagnani is, and that's both a good and a bad thing. There's not much scope for him to improve, but we know what he is. He can score. He's not going to get rebounds. He gets more blocks than you think. He can hit a three. He's a good free throw shooting big man. He's a guy who can give you something, and he can definitely score when he gets minutes. So if we see him playing those 24 minutes off the bench, 16-team leaguers will want to address Andrea Bagnani and go, okay, there's something here that we can deal with. And any team he goes to, he's not going to be a guy that really is out of rotations. He'll play, and he'll play 20 minutes. He'll play 22 minutes, something along those lines. Not big numbers. So we probably won't see the numbers he put up down the stretch, but his play down the stretch made everyone go, look at this. He is over the injuries. He is playing well, and maybe this guy does have a really distinct skill set and a role that could be played. So I think that Andrea Bagnani, again, depending on where he lands, there's definitely some deeper league value in him. Now, the rest of the guys, Amundsen, Ware, and Smith. Lou Amundsen, he started way too many games than what he should have. 310 as a per game player. Travis Ware, 419th as a per game player. Both of those guys, there's no real value in. Let's be honest. Where are they going to play? And are they going to get minutes anywhere? I don't think we need to consider them much for fantasy purposes at all. Jason Smith is an interesting one. He had stretches of time where he was starting and putting up good numbers. Look, his total roto rank at 172 is impressive. He's another big man who can hit free throws like Bagnani. Total head-to-head 198, per game at 253 is not that good, but it's still something. And he looked good over the last stretch of the season, ranked 153rd in the last month. Where does he end up? He's going to be a guy who can hit some threes, he can block some shots, points and rebounds sort of guy. And really, really good percentages as well. So there is some fantasy value if he finds himself in a situation where he's going to play. If he gets the 20 minutes off the bench, Jason Smith becomes a guy that you have to consider in certain situations. But standard leagues, it'll only be a case of, oh, someone's injured, Jason Smith starting, maybe let's get him in for two or three games. We know who Jason Smith is at this stage. It was great to see him back from his injury because that was, it's always a concern to see guys get injured. And then he came back from a severe injury. And he was decent. I think that's the best way of putting what Jason Smith was able to do. 8 points, 4 rebounds in his 22 minutes, half a block, half a steal. You know, not bad numbers from him. The guy that I really want to focus on in this front court, though, is Cole Aldridge. I talked about Cole Aldridge a lot during the season because I thought that the Knicks should have been giving him more minutes. They didn't. I don't know why. He only played 16 minutes a game in his 61 games, which is a crime to me. Now, he was really, really impressive when he played. His per 36 fantasy numbers, he was the 29th ranked player. 29. Because in 16 minutes, he got 5.5 rebounds, 5.5 points, one over a block, 0.6 steals, 48% shooting, 78 from the line. Yeah, you translate them into 30 minutes a game, not even 36. You're looking at a guy getting 10 points, 9 rebounds, 2 blocks, you know, over a steal, and good efficiency. But for some reason, Derek Fisher didn't want to develop young players. Let's put Jason Smith in. Let's put Quincy Acey. Not that Acey's old. Let's put 32-year-old Lou Amundsen. Let's play him in there and not develop these guys who Cole Aldridge could be a guy who is not necessarily the center of the future, but he can have big numbers. And he's shown that when he gets the minutes, he can put up the numbers. So when I'm looking at Cole Aldridge for dynasty leagues, I don't necessarily think the Knicks are bringing in another center. So we could maybe Fisher wakes up and goes, you know what, let's just run with Aldridge as our center and play him 25 minutes a night. Then we talk 14-team leagues, that Aldridge definitely becomes someone that I'm taking a gamble on towards the end of drafts because the numbers he can put up can be... We've seen that they can be really, really good. He's a great per-minute type of player. We saw games where he'd go out there and score, you know, 12 points in the first quarter and stuff that you just wouldn't expect to come from Cole Aldridge. But he did it, and he did it often enough where it wasn't a fluke. The problem was Derek Fisher and the way that they ran the rotation. Now, per game, even in those limited minutes, even in 16 minutes a game, he was the 160th ranked player per game. In total head-to-head, 176 in 16 minutes a game. That is why it is so baffling that he played so little. Now, after the All-Star break, 111th. Head-to-head last month, 130th. These are good numbers in such small amount of playing time. If he gets in that situation where he gets the minutes, and there is every chance of that, even though he is a free agent, if the Knicks do bring him back, or someone brings him back and gives him 20 to 25 minutes a game, there's some value from Cole Aldridge. So 14-team leagues definitely need to consider looking at him. He's someone who I think has got a ton of potential, and it was never really a situation where he failed to deliver. It was he would go out there and put up big numbers, and then the next minute, he's not in the rotation. He's not playing. He's getting 5 minutes a game. Complete batshit crazy stuff that Derek Fisher would do that made no sense to me then, and it still makes no sense to me now. So he's someone that I'm definitely keeping an eye on. I think that there can be some value for him if he signs back with the Knicks. Mallow, I think, is going to be a valuable player fantasy-wise because I think he will slide a little bit. But for the other guys who are guaranteed to be on this team, Jose Calderon, Langston Galloway, Cle'Anthony Early, Tim Hardaway, and Mallow. They're the only guys who are guaranteed to be on this team. Galloway's got some value. Definitely not what he showed towards the end of the season. Early can rise up, but with Mallow coming back, it dampens his value. Tim Hardaway Jr. is a spud. There's nothing exciting about him. And Jose Calderon, he could be in for a bounce-back season, but at his age and with potentially another point guard coming in, I don't think there's much to like there. So as much as there was not much to like with the Knicks last season, there's not much to like moving forward. Pick four looms huge for this team, what they do with it. The return of Mallow, that's where the value is. And then you've got, you know, what are they going to do in all these roster spots with only five guys with guaranteed deals for next season? There's going to be some change. There's going to be some other players brought in. And that means there's going to be opportunities. See what happens with Bargnani. See what happens with Aldridge. See what they want to do. See if they bring back Schwed. There's a number of things that this team can do, and it's going to influence their fantasy value. But the big takeaways, I think, from listening to this podcast and from my research with the Knicks is that Cole Aldridge was a permanent stud and didn't get enough playing time and could break out if he gets the playing time. Langston Galloway was solid, but does he ever replicate that throughout his career? Maybe. Alexei Schwed, the same situation. He needs big minutes to put up big numbers. And the other thing to take away from it is that Mallow is probably going to slide in drafts and he could be a bargain player for you if you're able to snag him in the 30s or even late 30s. I think that could be a real bargain to get Mallow there. We're not going to have any idea until the season rolls around and drafts start happening, but I get the impression his value is going to be discounted by a lot of people who plug that injury prone tag or he's done, he's faded, the triangle, all those things when in essence, when he was coming, playing just before he shut it down, his numbers were almost on par with what they were last season. All right, that's it for today's podcast on the Knicks. Not a great team to get through, to be honest. It was not fun talking about guys like Travis Ware. The next podcast, we're going to talk about the Los Angeles Lakers. So if you have any questions about the Lakers, I'll obviously put some stuff up on Twitter or on Instagram and Facebook about that as well. But send me any questions about the Los Angeles Lakers, the holders of the number 2 overall draft pick in the upcoming draft. Make sure you're sharing the show through Twitter, retweets, Facebook, Instagram likes, all that sort of stuff. Just help the podcast out, help it grow. And thank you to everybody who's done that. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.